And I'm McKenna.
And together we're the Daily Profcast.
We're two long-distance besties
who share a love of Harry Potter.
We hope you enjoy the episode.
Hi, everybody.
Hello.
Welcome back to the Daily Profcast.
Today we are finishing up our reread of The Chamber of Secrets.
Yee!
I know. These are some really good chapters, so I'm pretty excited.
This is my favorite. Coming up is my favorite chapter thus far of the series.
Chapter 16 is called The Chamber of Secrets. Fun fact, this is the first chapter in the book series to be named after the title of the book.
The exams are still happening because McGonagall's a hard ass.
I don't know that I think it's because she's a hard ass. I think she's trying to create a sense of normalcy for these
normalcy.
Two.
Absolutely. I agree. They're not happy about it though.
No, they're not happy about it. And I think it's so funny. Harry says that he doesn't know that he's learned anything that year.
To say they've been distracted is an understatement. So
yeah, it's kind of funny.
That makes sense. The mandrakes are ready. What does it say? They've started moving into each other's pots.
That's so cute.
So fun. I love the language that she uses to talk about the mandrakes. It's hilarious. There's this moment where Ginny comes to them at breakfast and is like this close to spilling the beans about everything.
I think it's so cute that she chooses to go to Ron out of all of her brothers that are there.
Yeah.
Obviously just shows she has affection for him and like a close bond, but she doesn't tell them anything.
Yeah, because Percy comes in, right?
Right. And says, don't spoil my secret. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Then they find the note in Hermione's hand and she's petrified. There's a note, crumpled piece of paper in her hand. They get it out. The piece of paper is a page out of a book and the page is all about basilisks.
So
McKenna, talk to us about basilisks.
Well, I'm going to backtrack just a little bit because they're going to try and go to Moaning Myrtle's stall. And McGonagall catches them in the halls. Of course, the students are not supposed to be roaming the halls by themselves. They're being escorted by all the professors to and from classes. And McGonagall says, what are you doing? And on the spot, Harry makes up a lie saying they were going to go visit Hermione. Number one, this is a really tender moment for McGonagall because as strict and as tough as she is, she's like, of course, this is so hard on you. You can go skip class and go visit Hermione up in the hospital wing. It's such a little Slytherin moment of Harry to manipulate McGonagall into getting what he wants. As we like are exploring this theme of ways that Harry kind of can fit into both the Slytherin and the Gryffindor camp, he can be a little manipulative a little bit sometimes. I thought that was cute. Of course, they do find the note in Hermione's hand and we learn a lot about basilisks. So number one, can we talk about, they say that chuck a chicken egg under a toad and you've got a basilisk.
Anatomically and evolutionarily and physiologically, how?
So random. So do we think there's a lot of basilisk or not a lot of basilisk?
Basili. An old European legend, and it is said that they are the serpent king, and it does note that in the description we're provided from the book page that Hermione has ripped out. The idea that they can cause death with a single glance is also part of the original basilisk lore. So the author stuck pretty close to the original lore of the basilisk. Other times it's described as having poisonous breath. Some of the pictures you find when you look up basilisk is not necessarily a snake. Some of them, they look like weird lizards that are also part chicken. The idea of the like egg from the chicken under a toad, that comes into play. The basilisk is featured in Geoffrey Chaucer's Canterbury Tales. It's an old European legend. I love those moments where we get sort of old myths and legends incorporated into Harry Potter. In the book, it says they're the king of snakes, king of serpents. It does say it's a snake. People keep commenting. I posted a TikTok about basilisks and people are like, it's a legless lizard. In the book, it says it's a snake. So I don't know where you're getting legless from.
Plus, the Slytherin symbol is a snake. And Harry can speak Parseltongue to talk to the snake.
I don't know where everybody's getting legless lizard. It says it's a snake. It's a big ass snake. It may reach gigantic size and live for hundreds of years, which would make sense if it was the pet of Salazar Slytherin. It has venomous fangs. Its venom is deadly, as well as its, if you look it in the eye, it's also, you will suffer instant death.
Do we think Salazar Slytherin was like the Joe Exotic or the Carol Baskin of snakes?
Oh my gosh. I love that. And I wish somebody would write a fan fiction of that. The other thing that the page says is spiders flee before the basilisk, which is why Hagrid sent them to go talk to Aragog. The crowing of the rooster is fatal to it.
Which is why Hagrid was holding the roosters when he came in to...
Is it?
Yes.
Does Hagrid know it's a basilisk? Why didn't he tell anybody?
No, I don't think Hagrid's...
Killed the roosters. Ginny killed
the roosters. Yeah, somebody That's sent right. us a message after... Okay, it was Kiralee Hall on Instagram sent us a message saying he's wearing the balaclava because it's cold outside, it's Christmas, and he has been outside cleaning up the dead roosters that Ginny has been killing.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you, Kiralee. How problematic is it that in order to create a basilisk, you take a chicken egg and put it under a toad, but then a rooster's crow can kill the basilisk, which like, you would assume on a farm with like chickens, there could be a rooster. Doesn't feel like a great breeding ground for a...
That's absolutely a good point. Harry and Ron come to this realization. Oh crap, it's a giant snake. And that's where Harry realizes that that's why he can... Oh yeah, because I understand Parseltongue, that's why I can hear the voice.
And Hermione writes pipes on the bottom of the page. And that's when they come to the conclusion like, oh, the reason nobody has been able to find the monster is because it's traveling through the school in the pipes.
How big are these pipes?
How big are these pipes? In the movie, the pipes are like adult human, like 6 feet tall.
Yeah, they're huge.
How big is Hogwarts that you have 6 foot tall pipes in the walls? What are
it seems like Salazar Slytherin literally built the pipes for the basilisk to get around. He's like, let me just make this a little easier on you.
I just like love the idea that this literally giant snake has been just living in the pipes of the school for thousands of years and nobody's put two and two together yet.
Yeah, it's that's a lot. Like Dumbledore didn't figure that out.
And they've only had two problems with this snake thus far.
Like, seems like a bigger liability.
Maybe it's really smart and it's very well trained. And
well, so that's the thing. It's like it can only be summoned and controlled by the heir of Slytherin. What is it doing on its off time
but like,
when Slytherin isn't around?
So
can we talk about how brilliant Hermione is?
Yeah, she's just so smart.
She solves the mystery. Harry's the one who goes down to the chamber and battles the snake, but Hermione is the one who led him to the door.
Yeah.
She's brilliant.
It is true. Then we find out really tragically that Ginny has been taken into the Chamber of Secrets, and the teachers all say, we're going to send the students home. They put Lockhart to the task of getting into the chamber, which it's funny because they're like, now that he's gone, we can all really think of a real plan and get the kids out of here. So they all know he's, you know, an oaf.
Right.
So
right.
One of the questions I had while reading this part is, how do they know it's Ginny who's gone?
That is a fantastic question.
Because Harry and Ron are overhearing this when they're not supposed to have been.
Yeah, they're hiding in the staff room with the cloak, aren't they?
Yeah. McGonagall says, go tell the heads of house to make sure everybody's accounted for and tell them that they're going home tomorrow. How do they know it was Ginny?
Did they try and find out who all the students were who weren't in class and then narrowed it down? Because then wouldn't Harry and Ron also be?
Exactly.
Or are they counting them in the hospital wing because they said they were going to go visit Hermione? That's a really good question. How do they know it's Ginny?
Inquiring minds want to know.
We don't know at this point why it was Ginny that was taken down. We know that she's been distraught, but we don't quite understand yet what she has to do with this.
Yeah, Harry's like, oh, well, this must have been what she was trying to tell us. It's also a plot inconsistency, right? Because what we know of the heir of Slytherin and the basilisk is they're after Muggleborns. And yeah. Ginny's from a prominent pure-blooded family. So
yeah,
there is this question of why Ginny, you know?
Totally. Totally. So then the other thing over here is, like you said, they're poking fun at Lockhart. They're like, oh yeah, you go get it. You go save her. And I don't think any of the professors are taking this seriously, but Lockhart takes this very seriously and decides to make a run for it.
Yeah, it's funny because they're all like, yeah, yeah, you go take care of it. You go take care of it. And then once he leaves, they're like, okay, he's gone. Now the real work can begin to figure out what to do. I think maybe at this point, everybody, it says her skeleton will lay in the chamber forever. I think maybe everybody assumes Ginny's already dead.
So rough.
And Harry also, of course, we get his thoughts in the book, and he also is trying to be a friend to Ron, but he says, I don't really understand how she could be alive still.
Now with what they've learned about basilisks, because they're assuming that maybe the basilisk has taken Ginny down there. We later find out Ginny has gone down out of her own volition. If they're thinking like this giant snake dragged her down to the Chamber of Secrets, she's dead. Harry and Ron go confront Lockhart because they said, let's tell him what we know.
Yeah, he's a fraud, but it's so embarrassing to be beaten by 2 second years.
Oh, totally. He's packing up. And they're like, what about all your books? And he's like, I am really good at memory charms. And all of that was BS. I basically stole like the stories of other wizards.
They kind of coerce him into going and figuring out how to open the chamber. At this point, I'm not even sure why they take him.
Harry disarms him. He gets to use his Expelliarmus, which will become his favorite spell, as we learn later.
He says, oh, I bet you wish Snape hadn't taught us how to use Expelliarmus, which I love.
Yeah.
I just don't know why they took Lockhart.
Yeah.
Because he's obviously useless.
They take him hostage. They're like, you said you were going to go down there, so you better go down there. But you're right. He is useless. They talk to Myrtle.
Why did Dumbledore never ask Myrtle about her death?
Another really baffling question. You'd think Dumbledore would have been able to figure it out.
Where are the adults?
What is happening?
You don't think Dumbledore, the most talented wizard of the age, and there's dead roosters appearing on the property, and there's literally an eyewitness account from a ghost who still lives in the castle and has for many, many years.
They bring like the Care of Magical Creatures teacher in and be like, hey, so Big Eyes, she died when she saw it. You're just like finding all of the plot holes in Harry Potter.
I'm just confused. I'm just like, why do we never investigate this more? She died.
Yes,
she died, but we have a ghost. There's somebody available to ask questions.
Yeah. Dumbledore. Oh, Dumbledore. They find the entrance to the chamber. It's a tiny engraving of a snake on one of the sinks, right?
Nice. Subtle. Love that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not even the entrance to the chamber. It's like the entrance to the way to the chamber. He speaks in Parseltongue and it opens. They slide down the pipe. They end up in a tunnel.
And Harry enters into the chamber by speaking Parseltongue.
Yes.
And Ron is going to imitate this much later in the series.
Yeah, which is brilliant. And he learns it from Harry. Lockhart gets a hold of Ron's wand, tries to obliviate them, to erase their memories. We know Ron's wand is broken. The spell backfires. And he ends up wiping his own memory. The backfired spell also causes a little chain reaction and some stones fall and barricade. It splits up Ron and Lockhart and then splits them from Harry.
Right.
So Harry says, you know, you wait with Lockhart and I'll go into the chamber. Oh, no. This is when Harry opens the Ron's not with him when he opens the chamber. He's already behind.
Yeah. Ron goes initially in with him and then Harry has to open the like actual door to the chamber.
Yeah, that's after Ron is like with Lockhart.
And Ron is on the other side of the rocks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's, so yeah, they've entered, Harry has just entered the Chamber of Secrets. So these two 12-year-olds and a 28-year-old buffoon have located the entrance to a secret room that for centuries, millennia, nobody else has been able to find.
It has to be dusty down there, right?
Probably pretty dusty.
And like stinky?
Probably pretty janky.
Yeah. Chapter 17 is called The Heir of Slytherin. This chapter is fabulous.
This is the best chapter of the series thus far.
And spooky.
It's so chilling. It's completely terrifying and beautifully written. And, you know, it's like this is the chapter, just thinking ahead, like what we know about the end of the series. Like we get to see all of the differences between Tom Riddle and Harry. as far as their characters. This is my favorite chapter thus far. I just had such a delightful time reading this, but it was spoopy. You're right.
It was, you said chilling, and that's the perfect word. Rereading it now as a grown adult, I was just like, oh my God.
We see this scene in the films, and in the films, it's still very evocative. But just like the entire discussion between the memory of Tom Riddle and Harry is like, it gives you this like bad juju feeling in the pit. Oh, it's like yeah. It's just like the conversation between them is just, it's horrifying.
It's horrifying. Harry enters and we get some imagery about what the chamber looks like. He says there's columns, and then between the columns, there's this large statue of a man with a thin beard.
What I made a note about too, because
in the movies, it's like there's these two pools of water and the long cobblestone or paved way. And then there's like a face. It almost looks like, yes, it almost looks like a Greek or like Roman face with like an open mouth.
Yes, yes.
But that's not the imagery we get here, because he says between the very two large feet, there is Ginny laying on the ground. And the wizard they have is much more of the description we typically get or see of Salazar Slytherin. So in the movie, the face, it's not a body, it's just a face, has curly hair, no beard, but this has a long, thin beard. It's much more the description of Salazar Slytherin that we see, or like the visual that we normally get.
Yeah, and I think in the movie there is like a beard and a mustache flowing down. It's the face looks like what I would imagine Godric Gryffindor to look like in the film version.
Yeah.
Yeah, Harry sees Ginny and she's not only not coherent, she's not, you know, awake, and she's not waking up either. "She won't wake," said a soft voice. A tall black-haired boy was leaning against the nearest pillar watching. He was strangely blurred around the edges as though Harry were looking at him through a misted window, but there was no mistaking him. Tom Riddle. So Tom Riddle's here, and like, how is Tom Riddle here? Because Tom Riddle, as far as like that imagery of Tom Riddle, is like a young man. He was that age in the 50s. How is he here? And I have a question about this. Does this like manifestation of Tom Riddle, not that he's tangible, but you can look at him, he's like standing in front of you and interacting with you, this manifestation of him from the diary, does this have to do with its pensive properties? Or is this something in the nature of a Horcrux, and like how a Horcrux is able to like manifest when a part of the soul is, I don't know, activated? It's very interesting, because even in a pensive, none of those people can come out of the pensive and be independent of it.
I believe that it's the Horcrux property of the piece of the soul being in this Horcrux to like project out, because we see in Deathly Hallows, you obviously in the movie with the visual of when Ron's about to destroy the Horcrux, he sees the projection come out of it. I think that this piece of the Horcrux soul is growing stronger by Ginny bearing her soul to the diary.
Right. It does say that it gets stronger as she gets weaker. So it's feeding off of her. Interesting.
We see Tom Riddle. We see this. It's not a ghost. We just see this part of the soul manifested into reality, which is just very interesting. And Harry is so good and so trusting. That is what I just really, he's like, oh my gosh, Tom Riddle, I recognize you from the diary, like going into the memories. Ginny needs help. She needs our help. He just doesn't realize, hey, there's something wrong here with this guy.
Yeah. Well, and he does ask him, he goes, are you a ghost? And he says, no, a memory. And again, I mean, if I were 12, I wouldn't put two and two together either.
Yeah, but like, you're in this chamber alone, and you know something's messy, and this person is here, and like, Harry doesn't even think like, oh, he's a bad guy. Harry's just like, oh my God, you have to help me help Ginny.
He gives him the benefit of the doubt. You're right.
Tom picks up Harry's wand and he examines it. It's so interesting to me, because I wonder, did he feel a connection to Harry's wand? Because his own wand shares the same core as Harry's wand.
Right. Good question.
And I'm so fascinated by wand lore.
You do love wand lore. McKenna, if she could have any wizarding occupation, she would want to be a wand maker.
Mm-hmm.
and you'd make a fabulous one.
Oh my God, thank you. So I find this really interesting because obviously by Deathly Hallows, after many encounters with Harry for Goblet of Fire and Order of the Phoenix and whatever, Voldemort very much understands that his wand is useless to Harry's wand because they mm-hmm. share this connection. So I just wonder, as he's picking up his wand and he's carefully examining it and he's looking it over, did he feel some sort of emotional connection?
That's a really good question. Or did the wand feel some sort of connection?
Right.
Because wands have personalities, as we learn later.
That's so a good question. Was Harry's wand, when it chose him, did it choose really Harry, or did it really choose the piece of Voldemort inside of his soul?
I just gasped. This doesn't happen in the film, but in the end of Deathly Hallows, Harry uses the Elder Wand to repair his wand, and the Elder Wand goes back with Dumbledore. And he's still able to use his wand, but that's a good question. Interesting.
There's something funny about the wands. We've known that since the Philosopher's Stone.
And you know what? There are other things. So isn't it canon that Harry loses his ability to speak Parseltongue mm-hmm. after he comes back, after Voldemort destroys the part of the Horcrux in him? So what other things change? That's a really, really good question.
Yeah, I mean, we know that wands can obey to new owners. Wands are almost, they're transient beings. They have feelings, they have loyalties, that sort of thing. So it's possible that Harry's wand, maybe while initially attracted to the part of Harry's soul that was Horcrux, just became loyal to him because of who he was and the bond that he formed with his wand.
Yeah.
Because we see he uses Draco's wand and it's fine, but Draco says, I really feel so much different when I'm using my wand. Like, give me my wand back.
Yeah. Then Tom goes into this diatribe about how he manipulated Ginny into doing his bidding. So we find out that Ginny has been doing his bidding through like him communicating to her through the diary, because she got a hold of the diary. We'll find out how later. But
this is the worst part of this chapter to me, because he takes so much sick pleasure and how he was able to manipulate her. And then when I just think back that I just said, oh, the part of the little Slytherin part of Harry that was able to manipulate McGonagall, like, this is the big difference in the good versus evil. He takes such sick pleasure out of how he was like really able to control her.
Yeah, I wrote down, I said, this is terrifying. Tom Riddle is a child abuser.
He's a narcissist.
Well, yeah, definitely. There's a point he says on 310, I've always been able to charm. And I just want to drive home my point that Tom Riddle is an unhealthy three.
I wrote down, this goes far beyond any of the Slytherin trope of being cunning or manipulative. He is truly mentally ill.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just disturbing.
It's incredibly disturbing. You're right. It's the worst part of the chapter when he's talking about manipulating Ginny. Ginny's 11. We know the diary talks back and she's like writing down her thoughts and her fears in this diary, as any 11-year-old girl would do. I almost want to see like a Midnight Sun situation where we get this book from Ginny Weasley's perspective, because how crushing as an 11-year-old is that? That's this moment in Ginny's life really shapes the rest of who she becomes as a person, and like how we see her grow as a person and her personality. I would just never want to have anybody in my head like this ever again. I would understand how horrifying it is to have this person in your head. Her and Harry sort of share this common
trauma. That's what I was going to say. I think when we think about why Harry and Ginny, you know, find each other romantically, Ginny's really the only other person in Harry's life who has like been personally manipulated. What's the line in Mean Girls? Raise your hand if you've been personally victimized by Regina George.
Victimized by Regina George.
Harry and Ginny.
Raise your hand if you've been personally victimized by Tom Riddle.
Harry goes through these disturbing moments of Voldemort getting into his head and reading his thoughts, and Ginny has experienced that personally, slightly different way, but she's the only person who can really, I think, relate to what that trauma is, that collective trauma.
And it is traumatic. I feel like my heart aches for what Ginny went through this whole year, her first year at Hogwarts. Can you imagine?
Oh yeah, and it's, she says later she had been looking forward to going to Hogwarts ever since Bill had gone.
Oh.
And just what a disappointing experience. What we learn is Ginny is telling Tom through the diary who Harry is. because Ginny likes Harry a lot. And so this was interesting to me because Tom is a memory and he's very much stuck in the past. And so all he knows about Voldemort dying or disappearing after Harry's parents' death and Harry living, he's getting from Ginny. These aren't experiences he remembers personally, which is interesting because
the memory version of him.
Right, the memory version. Because in Philosopher's Stone, he encountered the part of Voldemort that was defeated that night.
But lived through it. Yeah.
But lived through it. Tom is getting all this information from Ginny. It's all hearsay almost.
Yeah.
And Tom also refers to Dumbledore as the Transfiguration teacher.
Right.
So obviously not knowing that Dumbledore, well, I'm sure Ginny told him, but is not, it's not the Transfiguration teacher.
Yeah, you're right.
Anymore.
It's like how much information does this memory version of Tom Riddle have access to? And like, is it solely because of Ginny or is it because like, you're right. It's like he only has a reference point from moment in time when he made this Horcrux.
I think he says originally when he started speaking to Ginny, it was with the intention of reopening the chamber and killing Muggleborns.
And then he got a new goal.
Yeah, once Ginny mentioned Harry, which imagine the guilt if Ginny ever found out that really the only reason he tried to kill Harry was because she had divulged information about his parents.
There's another thing he says, I lived on a diet of her deepest fears. Ugh. First of all, yeah, cringe. Second of all, that's like the Dementors. Mm-hmm. That's like another shared trauma that they have almost. Like having somebody take your fears and feed off of that. Oh, God. Horrible.
Tom recognizes that himself and Harry have so many eerie similarities.
Right.
They both speak Parseltongue. They both are half-bloods who were raised by Muggles. But then this is so defining to me because this is where I really can cement that Tom Riddle has always been and will always be a narcissist because he's like, right. At first I thought it was interesting and then I just realized that they were coincidences and that you are nothing. What a way to miss the mark. How smart he thought he was at 16. He knows nothing if he can't recognize that perhaps a bit of his soul lives in Harry after the encounter with Harry's parents.
Yes. So this diary, which we will later find out is a Horcrux, this is his first Horcrux that he made. Mm-hmm. And he made it at the age of 16-ish. And the person he had to kill to make it was Myrtle, right? The death that he used to create this Horcrux was Myrtle. This is his first Horcrux he's ever made. And we will later find out this is on Slughorn's information. He uses the information that Slughorn gives him to do this. At 16, he kills somebody and splits his soul apart.
Yeah.
Insane.
Insane.
It's got me thinking about Horcruxes. Riddle used sort of a paraphernalia from each of the founders to create a Horcrux. So there's Slytherin's locket. There's Hufflepuff's goblet, a cup that he gets from Hezepiah Smith, whatever her name is. I always say it wrong, Hepzibah Smith. And then the diadem of Rowena Ravenclaw. None of the Horcruxes are a Gryffindor item. It's fitting that the Sword of Gryffindor is the thing that helps destroy them.
Yeah, it destroys them because of the basilisk though.
Right. But like the significance of like the fourth founder, like that thing completing the deed.
And listen, I think he would have wanted to use the Sword of Gryffindor as a Horcrux. Oh. It only appears to people who deserve it.
Yeah.
So yeah. Impossible. I think he uses these items from the founders as a way to stake his claim and ownership over Hogwarts.
Right. Yeah. And back to that narcissism.
Yeah. It's a control tactic thing. For sure.
Harry's like, why are you doing this? He just thinks this is a really messed up kid. Finally, we learn this isn't just anybody. This is the guy who becomes Voldemort. Right. Harry hasn't realized that yet until Tom tells him.
Yes.
Which makes it even scarier. So you're dealing with this scary person who's doing all these horrible things. you come to realize it's not only this, just this scary person, it's the scary person who murdered your parents and tried to murder you, now on more than one occasion.
And we learn he's the heir of Slytherin, like, mm-hmm. in a really backhanded way, but mm-hmm. he is.
It's another weird similarity that Tom Riddle and Harry have, is they're like, their backstories are so tragic. One of them grows from it, and the other one uses it not as an excuse, but that's his reasoning for being so evil. The dichotomy between them, like, you don't have to let your trauma define you. Harry doesn't let it define him. Tom Riddle uses it, and it absolutely defines him.
Yeah, it's just, it's so sad.
It's sad. Harry realizes this is Voldemort. He stands up to him. This is one of my favorite Harry moments.
It isn't so endearing.
It's so great. Tom Riddle goes, I had become the greatest sorcerer in the world. The first thing out of Harry's mouth is, what? You're not. Not what? Not the greatest sorcerer in the world. Sorry to disappoint you and all that, but the greatest wizard in the world is Albus Dumbledore. Ooh, burn!
Harry's sass, Harry's book sass is incredible, always.
It's the best. But like, he literally just made a comeback to the Dark Lord. Can you imagine the bravery?
And
I want to go ahead.
Good on Harry for doing so.
And the comment, Voldemort's not like, whatever. The comment bothers him. It says the smile had gone from Riddle's face to be replaced by an ugly look.
Because he's always had this internal competition with Dumbledore.
Yeah. Yeah. And Harry's like sticking up for Dumbledore. It's crazy. Then a crimson bird the size of a swan had appeared. The phoenix comes down into the chamber and he brings Harry the sorting hat.
Yeah.
And Tom Riddle's laughing at this. He's like, Dumbledore's bird brought you a hat to help you? That's ridiculous. I want to talk about the significance of it being the sorting hat that is brought to the rescue. This whole book, Harry has had a huge identity crisis mm-hmm. about what house he was sorted into. And it's like when the sorting hat is brought in and he pulls the Sword of Gryffindor out of the hat later, what a confirmation that he was meant to be in Gryffindor.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is a literary device letting us know that Harry belonged in Gryffindor all along.
Yeah, he is a Gryffindor because the sword will only present itself to worthy Gryffindors.
Harry mentions he doesn't see why this is going to help him either, but at least he's not alone anymore. Now that Fox is there, which is sweet.
Yeah, it says he felt like a sense of calm.
This is a part of the book that gave me chills. I want to read an excerpt of like what Harry says to Tom Riddle. No one knows why you lost your powers when you attacked me, said Harry abruptly. I don't know myself, but I know why you couldn't kill me, because my mother died to save me. My common muggle-born mother, he added, shaking with suppressed rage. She stopped you killing me, and I've seen the real you. I saw you last year. You're a wreck. You're barely alive. That's where all your power got you. You're in hiding. You're ugly. You're foul. Standing up to the Dark Lord, again, insane. He brings up this beautiful point that the greatest dark wizard of all time, supposedly, who detests muggle lineage, muggle-borns with a passion, was bested by a muggle-born witch. Mm-hmm. And her love for her son. Mm-hmm. I'm like getting emotional thinking about it. It's beautiful. The basilisk comes out. Harry covers his eyes because he knows that the basilisk's glare is deadly. And then he hears this shrieking and he opens his eyes a little bit and realizes that Fox has like pecked out the basilisk's eye. So Fox has blinded
the
basilisk.
Let me tell you.
Love that energy for Fox.
Yeah.
Yeah. The basilisk still has deadly venom. Harry feels something. He grabs the sorting hat. Does he put it on his head? It's like on his head or something. And he feels something hit him on the head, takes the sorting hat off, and the Sword of Gryffindor's in there. So he draws mm-hmm. the sword, sends the sword through the basilisks, and then on the way out, his arm gets pierced by one of the fangs.
So one of the questions I had about this that I researched was why the basilisk venom didn't kill the Horcrux inside of Harry.
Oh.
But I read that the venom never had time to reach his heart/soul where the Horcrux was housed because of the phoenix tears.
I see. Right. If it would have, he would have died.
Exactly.
Okay. That's a very good query you posed. Fox comes in pretty immediately and starts shedding tears on Harry's wound. And Tom Riddle's still there. And he's like, of course the Phoenix was freaking helping you this whole time.
Well, you didn't know that when you called it a stupid bird, now did you, buddy?
Did. I love the showdown, the verbal showdown that happened. Pretty beautiful. Oh my goodness. Riddle's sort of preoccupied with the bird saving Harry. And Harry doesn't know why, but he has this urge. He has this urge to pick up the basilisk fang, which came out in his arm, and stab the diary. He just does it on a whim.
I wonder what made him do it. I was thinking that rereading.
Yeah. So actually, and Fox brings him the diary. Then in a rush of wings, Fox had soared back overhead and something fell into Harry's lap, the diary. How did Fox know to give it to him? Smart bird. For a split second, both Harry and Riddle, wand still raised. So Riddle still got Harry's wand. He could have just hit him with a killing curse by now.
Yeah.
Thank God he didn't. Wants well, the race,
could his memory have wielded the wand?
Or is he just keeping it from Harry? That's a good question. Yeah, he hasn't done any spells thus far, so maybe that's true. Then without thinking, without considering, as though he had meant to do it all along, Harry seized the basilisk fang on the floor next to him and plunged it straight into the heart of the book. Harry does not know that he's just destroyed his first Horcrux.
The only Horcrux that he ever personally destroys?
So as soon as Tom Riddle is out of the picture, Ginny wakes up and Harry's, comforting her. She's clearly very distraught because Ginny, not only was she just almost killed, she feels horrible for everything that's happened. They go back, find Ron and Lockhart, and then Fox, they grab onto Fox, and one of the things we learned about Phoenixes is that they can carry incredibly heavy loads. They all grab onto each other and Fox carries them out of the chamber, which is insane. This bird carrying the weight of an adult man and three children.
My original book, I think the chapter art for my old book when I have it as a kid, was Fox carrying a chain of people out.
And they all went to McGonagall's office.
Yep. So the next chapter is Dobby's Reward.
Oh.
It's a short chapter, but we get a lot of classic things at the end of the books. Harry typically has a recap conversation with Dumbledore.
Yeah.
Who's been completely absent throughout the entire book. And then shows up to explain everything to Harry in a very vague and impersonal way.
At the end, on brand.
Being completely not helpful at all.
Yeah.
And
so, go ahead.
Yeah, so what I think is really cute in McGonagall's office is Harry thinking through how he wants to explain this, but doesn't want to throw Ginny under the bus at all. And I think that's so cute.
How he's trying to soften the blow for her. We never see this in the film. And there's so many moments when parents should have been called in. So in the books, parents get called in.
Yeah. Arthur Weasley delivers probably one of my two favorite quotes from this book. He's saying to Ginny, I thought I taught you better. Why did you trust it? It obviously had dark magic. And of course, in his line of work, that would seem like something obvious his children should have picked up on. But he says to her, never trust anything that thinks for itself if you can't see where it keeps its brain. I love that line.
Yeah,
I find that too. So deeply profound.
We find out that the Mandrake tonic has been brewed. The people who were petrified have been revived. Hermione's okay. Lockhart gets dealt with because he remembers nothing. And then, yeah, like you said, Dumbledore sort of sends everybody out of the office and just has this little debrief, his little end of the book debrief with Harry, like every book.
And he says, this is probably the most famous quote of this book, but he says, it is our choices that show us who we really are far more than our abilities.
Mm, love that.
He kind of explains to Harry, I think a little bit he explains the concept of a Horcrux, though they don't know or haven't put pieces together to know what a Horcrux is and that Harry is a Horcrux or, whatever the situation is. So it's interesting how we get these tidbits in there.
Yeah. Yeah. The breadcrumbs, if you will. And who should show up but the queen herself, Lucius Malfoy.
Oh my goodness.
Lucius is not happy.
No, he's not happy.
He also gets completely outed in front of Dumbledore because Harry's you literally put this book in Ginny's cauldron at the beginning of the year. Lucius is behind this entire ordeal.
Right. And so I think a big question people have is, did Lucius do this for the benefit of Voldemort acting as a supporter and a Death Eater, or did he do this on his own volition? What I read was that Lucius was trying to rid himself of anything that was connecting him to Voldemort. Giving it to Ginny, the daughter of Arthur, who he hates, was killing two birds with one stone in his mind. Voldemort is later going to punish him for doing this, as Lucius was supposed to hold on to it and then wait for Voldemort to signal that he should bring it back to Hogwarts so that the chamber could be reopened.
Right. We know from Lucius's backstory that before Voldemort was vanquished, he gave the diary to Lucius and was like, hold on to this for me. And then, you know, he disappeared and Lucius just had it. But my question is, if this was just like a convenient way to get rid of the diary, why did Dobby come to warn Harry? There was a plan. Dobby had overheard of a plan to. But at the same time, like, how did Lucius know that the diary was going to do that to Ginny?
I think Voldemort told him, not that it was a Horcrux, but this contains my living memories, and this is important, and we'll need to eventually bring it back to Hogwarts. This holds the key to opening the Chamber of Secrets.
Yeah. I don't know. My question is, how much did Lucius plan this out? Like, how much did he sort of see happening? Because, you know, Lucius comes back after that and is like, you know, trying to get rid of Dumbledore, trying to get the other governors to get rid of Dumbledore. We find out that that was all sort of, that he was threatening them to get rid of Dumbledore. And that wasn't sort of on their own accord.
I think Lucius sees Ginny as a vulnerable girl who can interact with this diary that he knows houses some sort of dark magic connected to Voldemort, connected to the Chamber of Secrets. I think this is happening at the same time where Arthur's trying to pass the Muggle Protection Act. So having his daughter associated with killing, as a part of a prominent pureblood family, associated with killing Muggleborns is not going to help him in his position in the ministry. Lucius wants things to go poorly for Arthur at work. It will divert attention from him having his home raided for dark artifacts. I think Lucius is like, if some Muggleborns get killed in the process, like, great. But it is disgusting. I don't think this plot was at all to do with bringing back a second coming of the Dark Lord, because as we see, Voldemort obviously had a certain amount of trust in Lucius. I think that's far more about him being like a very proud pureblood wizard and being sympathetic to that cause versus him being specifically fanatical about Voldemort. The way Bellatrix loves Voldemort is much different than how Lucius and Narcissa follow Voldemort. Yeah. And once Voldemort's gone, Lucius largely goes back to his own life. He doesn't go looking for him. This is a point of contention once Voldemort is back in a physical presence.
Lucius sort of gets badmouthed by Dumbledore and Harry. He storms out, and then Harry has this idea.
Oh, Harry.
Because he chases after Lucius and Dumbledore gives him back the diary and he says, you drop this. He's like, this isn't mine. And you know, Harry's being like, no, this is yours, take it back. Mr. Malfoy ripped the sock off the diary, threw it aside, then looked furiously from the ruined book to Harry. This horrible moment. You'll meet the same sticky end as your parents one of these days, Harry Potter. They were meddlesome fools too. What a horrible thing to say to a child who lost his parents.
Yes, everything Lucius does is horrible.
Horrible, correct. I mean, Lucius is horrible.
That's why...
Dobby caught the sock. And when you give a house elf an article of clothing, the house elf is freed from their bonds of servitude. So Harry just, in a roundabout way, freed Dobby. Mm-hmm. Somebody wrote me on a platform. Lucius is even more pissed. His plan's been thwarted. And now he's just lost his house elf. Mm-hmm. He comes at Harry with his wand. And Dobby, this like incredible house elf magic, Dobby like shoots him backwards.
Yeah, magic is like on another level.
It's so cool. Harry goes to the feast. Hermione comes back. There's a tearful greeting. Hagrid comes back. He thanks them for clearing his name. So cute. Lucius is sacked from the Governors Association. And we find out why Percy was sneaking around.
Oh, Percy has a girlfriend.
Percy's dating Penelope Clearwater.
I love that they attend the feast in their pajamas. That was one of my favorite details of
so cute.
One of the last lines of the book is that they get off the train and Harry says it was like he was leaving the magical world. So,
oh my gosh, guys, we finished Chamber of Secrets.
We did.
Signing off. See you at our film episode.
Yep. See you next week.
Yay. Go team.
Go team. Okay. Hey, thanks for listening to our latest episode. As always, please subscribe on whatever podcast platform you're listening on. And if you're not a listener on Apple Podcasts, it would still help us out a lot if you head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-star review. If you have any questions, comments, concerns about anything you heard in this episode today, please drop us a line at our Anchor profile. You can leave us a nifty little voice message there, or you can head to our Instagram @thedailyprofcast to DM us or leave us an email. Thank you.